Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
All right, Brian Barrett with you for the next hour or so, taking you up to Red Sox pregame with Will Fleming as the Sox will look to win the series over the Dodgers. David Price on the mound tonight as he looks to bail out Chris Sale. Ryu on the mound for the Dodgers, who is the front runner right now for the National League Cy Young. Your number 617-779-7937. If you want to weigh in on the Red Sox, what do you make of Chris Sale at this particular point in time? Any faith he's got to figure it out? Certainly welcome to weigh in on that. 617-779-7937. Also wanted to get to this, though. As it pertains to the Boston Celtics, and if you want to give an offseason grade on the Celtics, you can do that as well. But I found these comments funny from Brad Stevens that he made this week. So he was talking about free agency. And this is what Brad had to say, quote, "I think we've been fortunate. Obviously, this past year didn't go the way we wanted it to, but for the better part of this time, it's gone pretty darn well. And so we've actually been fortunate to have had to be that the case more often than not. Obviously, with Al a few years ago, and Gordon and Kemba and others that have chosen on lesser deals to come. So Boston's a special place. It's a special place to play, and we're excited about it. And he's a neat guy," referring to Kemba. "So I'm looking forward to having him on board." By the way, I like how Brad uses the word neat to describe Kemba. Could you get any more nerdy than that? Who describes an NBA superstar as neat? Neat. That's how he describes Kemba Walker. But I want to get to this for a second, because the bigger part that Brad mentions here is he said that essentially Al, Kemba, and Gordon Hayward all chose to come to Boston on lesser deals. And this could not be any more misleading. As if you were like the Clippers where Kawhi went for less, or the Lakers when LeBron went for less, or Brooklyn where the former Celtic Kyrie Irving went for less and Kevin Durant went for less. No. You guys realize what Brad is doing, right? Technically, he's right, but he's putting a spin on things here. That's what Brad Stevens is doing. So let's go through it real quickly here. So he said that Al Horford came for less when he did. Now he's a member of the Philadelphia 76ers, of course. So let's look at this. The great Al Horford, by the way, who everybody loves in this town, for whatever. Great plus minus. Great plus minus Al Horford. Great defensive rating. Okay, great. Yeah, where was he when the locker room was falling apart? I'd like everybody to tell me. When Kyrie was destroying the locker room, where was the great Al Horford, the great teammate? But anyway, getting back to the original point. So Al did technically come to Boston for less money, but let's remember that. It's not the whole story. The Atlanta Hawks offered Al a five-year deal, but wouldn't offer him 5 years at the max. And the C's offered him a four-year contract at the max. And Al told Atlanta, "If you don't give me a five-year maximum contract, I'm out." So Atlanta didn't give him a five-year max, so he left. So technically, Al left more money on the table, but there were circumstances for why Al came to Boston. And like, the Clippers were Kawhi's first choice. The Lakers were LeBron's first choice. Al Horford, a secondary free agent, if you will, he came to Boston as his second choice. He wanted to stay in Atlanta. Okay, so let's go to Kemba Walker. Kemba literally came out and said he would take a discount to stay in Charlotte. Okay, Kemba was eligible for $221 million at the Supermax. And Charlotte said, no, that's not going to work out for us, Kemba. We're not going to give you that. So if they offered Kemba like $200 mil, maybe even $190 million, he would have stayed. He said he would have stayed for less. He openly said, "I would stay for less." But then the Charlotte Hornets lowballed him to the point that they offered him $160 million. I know it sounds crazy to talk about these as like lowballing guys, $160 million, but that is $61 million less than he qualified for under the Supermax contract. So, yes, he technically came to Boston for less, but it's when the organization that he previously was employed by offered him $61 million less than the contract he had earned, right? Because he was an all-NBA performer. He earned that contract, and Charlotte said, "Nah, Kemba, we're not going to give it to you." So when they said, "What about $200 million? "Nah, nah, 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 nah. We'll give you $160 million. $61 million less. than you could have gotten from us originally. We're going to give you $61 million less. That's when he came to Boston. Remember this letter that he penned about how he wants to restore the winning culture and all this with the Celtics? Yeah, he wants to restore the winning culture after the Charlotte Hornets lowballed him. And look, hopefully Kemba Walker can restore a winning culture here with the Celtics. But Brad Stevens saying that guys have been coming to the Celtics for less, that is technically true, but it's misleading. Even the Gordon Hayward situation, he came for less. You had an advantage there because Brad Stevens was the recruiter, if you will, because he had the relationship with Gordon Hayward. But also remember this as it pertains to one Gordon Hayward. Gordon Hayward was upset with the Utah Jazz organization because the first time he became a restricted free agent, they allowed him to get to restricted free agency. He wanted a max contract from the Jazz, but they said, ah, go see if you can get it on the open market. He got it from Charlotte and they matched it. But he was upset because he wanted a longer term deal, originally going back to his first new extension as an NBA player. So even that is misleading with the Gordon Hayward situation because he had a bad relationship with the Utah Jazz from that last go around. Now, look, not to say that he was disgruntled in terms of his employment with the Jazz, but just that's always in the back of your mind. When you want something from your employer, they don't give it to you. That's always going to be in the back of your mind, and he saw the opportunity to leave. But with Allen, Kemba Walker, let's not forget, the Celtics were their sloppy seconds, and they're not even elite-level free agents. They're those secondary guys, and they wanted to come to you secondarily. You were not their first choice. So Brad Stevens talking about that at Summer League, that made me crack up, saying the guys came here for less money. Well, yeah, Brad, technically you're right. Technically you're right, but let's not dismiss all the facts in the case. 617-779-7937 is your number. Brian Barrett with you for the next hour or so here on WEI. If you want to hop on board, weigh in on the Celtics, their offseason, or the Red Sox, certainly welcome to do so. Let's get to Sam in Waltham. What's up, Sam?
Hey, I'm just calling asking about Nathan Eovaldi and his return back to the bullpen, and if you think that he's going to have any sort of impact, because I think he's still injured from what I've read, because they said that he was supposed to come back later on if he were to continue starting, but now that he's being implemented as a reliever, they said he can come back earlier, which I don't understand. So I wanted your comment on that, and then I also had a take on Chris Sale, where I've noticed a difference in his delivery, where it's less of that herky-jerky motion that we've become so accustomed to over the past couple of years, which made him so dominant, and almost seemed like that's where he got his like rapid fire delivery, which deceived hitters, in addition to the velocity that he had. And his delivery just looks a lot less, a lot more fluid, which I don't think is benefiting him.
That's an interesting take, Sam, and I appreciate the call. Very interesting take. 617-779-7937 if you want to grab his line. So if you think about it, what he's saying there, what Sam is saying is essentially the delivery has become more robotic. And what that says to me, if his observation is correct, is that Chris Sale could be overthinking things. Chris Sale could be overthinking things because he's thinking about his delivery now. Think about it. This was one of the most dominant pitchers in Major League Baseball, really, ever since he went from reliever when he first came up to the big leagues into the starting rotation with the White Sox. So he was never thinking about anything. Remember, this is a guy that doesn't like to shake off the catcher whatsoever. That's why he needed his binky back last night. Sandy Leon still didn't perform well. But he wants to look at Sandy Leon, get the sign, and throw it. So now if Chris Sale is struggling, they're pointing things out to him in his delivery, he's overthinking. He's thinking about these things. And Chris Sale is a pitcher that doesn't normally have to think through a start, right? He's not a Tom Glavine, Greg Maddux type. Even like David Price now. David Price has went from that power pitcher that he was before when he was coming up, throwing 95, throwing 96. We all remember in 08, he came out of the bullpen against the Red Sox in that American League Championship Series, and he was firing. Right? So David Price made the adjustment going from that power pitcher to the guy that is a painter. His game is based on precision now. But Chris Sale's never somebody that has to worry about his mechanics because he just gets the ball. It's like, try to hit my slider, you can't do it. Try to hit my fastball, you can't do it. And at this particular point in time, that's not the truth anymore. Guys are racking him to the point where he couldn't make it out of the fifth inning last night. You had to go get him in the fourth inning last night. Okay, you would have thought that that would have been E-Rod. Nope, 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 that was Chris Sale. He couldn't get out of the fourth inning. Okay, so Chris Sale, maybe to his point, to Sam's point, he's thinking through his start too much. And to the Eovaldi point, I have my concerns about Eovaldi because now the reason that he's coming back as a reliever and is not a starter is because, and Alex Cora was on OMF about a week and a half ago now, and he said essentially that it would take a month longer, to his point, to Sam's point there, to come back as a starting pitcher. So that's looking at, we're now what, July 14th? So you're looking at the middle of August, right? Because he threw a bullpen the other day, and Dave Dombrowski said he's going to join the bullpen this week at some point is the hope. So you're looking at the middle of August. So you just needed to get Nathan Eovaldi involved somehow in this team. And I don't blame them for doing that because, look, you're paying a guy $17 million per season. The contract was horrible to begin with. I never understood it. Nonetheless, getting back to the original point, you got to get some value on the guy. And if you look at the guys you're trotting out of your bullpen right now, they suck. Okay, Steven Wright, Marcus Walden has turned back into a pumpkin. All these guys. Outside of who? Brandon Workman, who's been consistent all season long. And even Workman, you get into a postseason series. Sorry, I don't trust the guy. He walks the ballpark. Don't trust him. I know he's got a historic opponent's batting averaged against, if you will, but I don't trust him in a postseason series based on how many guys he walks. And Matt Barnes right now, maybe this helps Matt Barnes because he's been overtaxed. Every time this guy's going to face 2, 3, 4 in the lineup, I'm not dismissing the fact that he's been awful on back-to-back days, and for whatever reason, it seems like he's allergic to the ninth inning. But Matt Barnes is somebody that we could all acknowledge. The guy's been overtaxed. But just getting Nathan Eovaldi back should be beneficial to the team. But I also have my doubts. Like, if you think about great relievers in Major League Baseball, they all have strikeouts per nine over 10, well over 10, most of them, in fact. Even Matt Barnes, you look at him, 16 strikeouts per nine innings. Nathan Eovaldi's never been a high strikeout guy, despite the fact that he's got 100 miles an hour in his back pocket. Never been a high strikeout guy. You say, Brian, what about the postseason last year when he had the 1.61 ERA? He only struck out 6.4 batters per nine innings. So I'm not so sure that he's going to be the great reliever that everybody thinks he's going to be. But based on what's in the bullpen right now, which is rubbish, he's going to be some improvement, you would hope. But I also wonder about the pressure factor of this, right? Because it's almost like Nathan Eovaldi is going to ride out on his white horse and he's going to save the Red Sox bullpen. We so sure of that? That's a lot of pressure for Nathan Eovaldi, who, remember, up until last year in the postseason, he's been pretty much a failure in most of his Major League Baseball career. And a lot of that's had to do with injuries. But again, the Dodgers gave up on him. The Marlins gave up on him. The Rays gave up on him. All these teams gave up on him. The Yankees gave up on him because he hadn't performed at a high level. He's a career 4.21 ERA guy. So you think about it, he's never lived up to what he was supposed to be outside of that run in the postseason last year. So that's a lot of pressure to put on Nathan Eovaldi to essentially save this bullpen. 617-779-7937 is the number. Let's get to Jordan in the Cape. Well, what's going on, Jordan?
Hey, yeah, so going to Chris Sale.
Yeah.
Chris Sale last year was like Mike Messina. He brought the Red Sox to the World Series. And now he's acting like Eric Gagne. He gives up all these hits, all these runs. What's going on with them?
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. I appreciate the call, Jordan. You can grab his line if you'd like. It's 617-779-7937. I don't get the Mike Mussina, Eric Gagne comp, but yeah, it's been a different guy this year. It has been a totally different guy this year. And you were expecting at least to get the good Chris Sale from the beginning of the season until at least August, because that's what the data tells you. That's what the last couple of years have told you. But you don't even get that out of Chris Sale at this particular point in time. You don't get it. All right, I want to get back to the Celtics, though. 617-779-7937. So I'm wondering this with Brad Stevens heading into the 2019-2020 campaign, because we've heard that, oh, Kyrie was the issue, and I'm not dismissing that. Everybody knows Kyrie was a problem. But are we so sure that Brad Stevens is the right coach for this version of the Celtics? Because it felt like to me last year, for the first time since Brad Stevens came from Butler, he had first world NBA problems. He had egos to manage. And how did he do? Well, he got an F. Okay, he got an F. He couldn't manage egos whatsoever. And for the first couple of years of Brad Stevens' career as an NBA coach, he was essentially coaching the little engine that could. That's what the Celtics were, right? No expectations. They were overachieving. And there was really not a lot of drama with the team, not a lot of questions with the team, right? Because even like Isaiah Thomas, he's somebody that organically became a star here through opportunities that Brad Stevens gave him. But you think about it, there was never any like questions with egos or anything along those lines as it pertained to the Celtics over Brad Stevens' first couple of years in the NBA. Isaiah was the guy 2 years ago or 3 years ago now. And really, everybody else was secondary on the team. There was nobody that needed shots outside of Isaiah Thomas. Even Al Horford, who is a max-level contract player, we all know he doesn't need shots, right? So there was never like this issue in terms of what you had in terms of the dynamic with the pecking order, the hierarchy on the team, or anything along those lines. And then, even Kyrie's first year, opening night, you have Gordon Hayward go down with the injury, right? And then after that, what happens? Gordon Hayward goes down with the injury, and then there's no expectations on the team anymore. Well, Hayward was supposed to be the second best player on the team with Kyrie Irving, so there's really no expectations, and they take off. And then you get to the postseason that year, and it's not like you had a lot of egos to manage because Kyrie wasn't playing. So you had Al Horford, who has no ego whatsoever, and guys like Tatum and Brown, who are getting really, now I get Brown was technically his second postseason, but his first real postseason where he was going to be a main contributor, if you will. And Jason Tatum was a rookie. So it wasn't like you had a lot of mouths to feed. You didn't have to please everybody. Everybody's pulling the rope in the same direction. And now what happens last year, the one time Brad Stevens had actual legitimate NBA first world problems, he failed as coach. That's the reality of where they're at. He failed as a coach. Kyrie Irving ran the locker room. And everybody else, they had no idea what their role on the team was. And that is supposed to be what the coach does. That's supposed to be what the coach does. And I look at a guy like Marcus Morris. Because there was no pecking order, because there was no hierarchy, everybody knew Kyrie was the guy. But after that, it was like a free-for-all. It was almost like these guys were battling for the title of like second best player on the team. Tatum develops all these bad habits, takes terrible twos. But it was almost like Tatum's got something to prove. He wants to make sure that he is this guy that looks like he has this bright future. Everybody's saying he could be a 10-time All-Star, could be a scoring champ. Remember that? That was the noise with Tatum coming after the playoff run a couple of years ago. So he wants to do his thing. Okay, Marcus Morris was looking to get paid. And he just got a $15 million deal with the Knicks for a year. He screwed over the Spurs, but nonetheless, I digress. So every time he got the ball, Marcus Morris turned into the black hole. And he would just throw the ball up. He would just shoot it every time he got it. So he never really established any sort of pecking order. And it really, now maybe he's telling Jason Tatum behind closed doors, like, dude, we got to stop at the long twos. But clearly it didn't work. Brad Stevens is supposed to tell his players what to do, and they're supposed to, at least in some capacity, listen. And when you have a player developing bad habits like Jason Tatum did, he's supposed to stop doing that. He's supposed to stop taking long twos the whole season. And Brad Stevens couldn't get him to stop doing it. There were times where he'd yank him out of games, but then he'd come back in the game and he'd start taking long twos again. Okay, so that never got coached out of Jason Tatum last year. Never got coached out of him. Okay, so last year, Brad Stevens never developed any sort of hierarchy, never developed any sort of pecking order, if you will. So are we so sure that Brad Stevens is going to be good with this team? Because look at the roster. Okay, Jason Tatum, we all know, wants to prove he's a star in the league. Okay, Kemba Walker, obviously he's a guy that needs shots. He's a guy that's a ball-dominant point guard, if you will. Jaylen Brown's looking to get paid. He wants a contract extension. He wants to get his money. He wants his opportunity to prove he's a good player and get that first opportunity to be like one of the main guys on a team outside that one playoff run. You bring in Enes Kanter. He needs his shots. And remember, he signed a 2-year deal, but the second year is an opt-out. He's looking for more money. He's going to want to put up his numbers. And then you got Gordon Hayward, who's looking to prove he's still a quality NBA player. So you got all those different things to manage. Okay, when Brad Stevens first took over, no expectations. And then organically, Isaiah became a star, and there was no other mouths to feed, if you will. So everything was easy. Everybody knew their role. It wasn't like one of these things where Brad Stevens had to manage egos. Last year, he had his opportunity to manage egos, and he failed. Big fat F. He was horrible. So are we supposed to believe that just because you take Kyrie Irving out of the equation, that now with all these other egos Brad Stevens has, that this means that everything's fine? It's all going to be good with Brad Stevens because that one guy that was the issue in the locker room, Kyrie Irving, is gone? I'm not so sure Brad Stevens is going to be able to fix things just because Kyrie Irving's gone. And what about some of the players? Do you think some of the players in the Celtics locker room at this time look at Brad Stevens a little bit differently? After the way that Kyrie Irving was just able to walk all over the organization, the way that Kyrie Irving was able to behave, and the way that Brad Stevens, when Kyrie Irving called him out for the way they were playing defense on Kemba Walker and basically apologized publicly, saying he's got to be better. So he allowed the player to call him out. And then after that, he said, yeah, I got to be better. You think that some of the guys in the locker room maybe have lost some respect for Brad Stevens? Like, this dude just walked all over you. You think there's a little bit of a different look that players have as it pertains to Brad Stevens compared to what they are, how they were looking at Brad Stevens before Kyrie destroyed the locker room this year? That's an interesting thing to think about. I wonder how guys look at Brad Stevens right now based on what happened last year. 617-779-7937 is your number. If you want to hop on board, weigh in on what you think of Chris Sale right now. Also, Is Brad Stevens definitely the right guy for this Celtics team, the 2019-2020 version of the Celtics? We'll get into all that. Before that, though, I'll get you a trending here on WEI.
The WEI Sports Radio Network. You're locked in to the WEI Sports Radio Network.
When Kemba gets it going like that, how tough is he to stop?
It's one-on-one. Bad pride. You know, down the stretch, try to come in and help as much as possible. Should have probably trapped him a little bit more like every other team does in the league. But we did. Torches us every time we play. It's no surprise.
He really was a beaut, wasn't he, Kyrie Irving? That's when he called up Brad Stevens when Kemba Walker lit up the Celtics. By the way, Kyrie was supposed to be covering him, but nonetheless, 617-779-7937, the number. Is Brad Stevens the right coach for the Celtics right now? If you want to weigh in on Chris Hill, certainly welcome to do so as well. 617-779-7937. Now, the reason we bring that up, where Kyrie Irving called out Brad Stevens, is remember what Brad said after that. He's fine with it as long as, quote, people put their name on it. He said, quote, he knows he can come in and talk about stuff. I've got an open door with regard to if he's ever got any issues about how the team has played and how we're going to guard people. I don't get too caught up in that. Listen, nobody is harder on me last night than me. I don't really care what's said outside of that. And he had a great game. We all have to finish it off. I'll take my part. So that means anybody can say anything about Brad Stevens. Hey, as long as you put your name on it, you're good. Say whatever you want. So this year, when Jason Tatum's upset about his touches, you can say, yeah, I think Brad's game plan sucked. Jaylen Brown could say, yeah, I don't think Brad's a good coach. But remember, I said it. Jaylen, I said it. I said, I don't think Brad's a good coach. Hey, as long as you put your name on it, guys, I'm cool with it. Okay. That's a great policy to have, Brad. Great policy to have. That's why I question. Is he going to be okay managing egos with this team? Because these are NBA problems he's going to have again this year. NBA problems, this guy is going to have him again this year. Is Brad Stevens going to be the guy that's right for the Celtics organization in 19 and 20, the 2019-2020 season? He was good when this was the team that nobody expected to do things, right? When everything was easy for Brad in terms of being a coach and dealing without any egos. But now he has egos. And we saw last year he couldn't deal with egos. Is he going to be able to deal with egos now? What makes you think Brad Stevens is going to be able to do that now? I don't know. Just because you remove Kyrie, all your problems are fixed? I don't know about that. 617-779-7937 is your number. Let's get to Larry in Maryland. What's going on, Larry?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A couple observations about Chris Sale. I think I'm not certain who the caller was, but who pointed to how David Price's game has evolved from throwing 97 coming out in the 08 season, the championship season for Tampa, now into sort of take a look at Chris Sale and the mileage he has on his arm. Does he need to evolve his game? I see him throw 95, 96 a little bit early, and then he's back down to 90, 91, 92. So perhaps his arm is a little bit worn. Maybe he needs to sort of take a look at what David Price, how he sort of recreated his game, and maybe copy a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's a fair point, Larry. Let me ask you this, though, Larry. It's a fair point. I want to ask you a question back. So we saw David Price make that adjustment, right, where he turned into more Tom Glavine than Randy Johnson, for example. Okay,
absolutely.
But my question is going to be, do you think Chris Sale can ever make that adjustment? Because Chris Sale, remember this, he's never been a control guy. If you look at it, going back to when he was great the past couple of years, he misses his spots all the time. He's not a precision pitcher. I'm wondering if Chris Sale can even make that adjustment. And if Chris Sale does try to make that type of adjustment, will he still be a good pitcher? I just don't see it. I see him more as a stuff guy than a pinpoint accuracy guy. I don't see him ever being able to make that change based on the way he pitches.
But when he's right, he throws, what, 10, 12 pitches an inning. He's up to 20, 25 pitches an inning. He did have pinpoint control at one time.
I don't think he ever did, Larry. I don't think he ever did.
You don't think so?
No.
No?
No. I think his stuff was, I just think his stuff was so great when he's throwing 95 to 97 mile an hour fastballs, and he had the best slider we've seen since Randy Johnson. I think it was about the stuff. I don't think he ever had pinpoint control, like, for example, David Price does now.
Could we still use Joe Kelly, you know? I mean, we could maybe he looked pretty good coming out of the bullpen last night. I mean, it seemed like Dombrowski gave up on Kelly. You know, he gave up on Kimbrel. The bullpen, you're spot on. I mean, outside of Hembree, perhaps, it's
Hembree's been pretty good this year. Yeah,
Fonz is taxed out. I mean, really.
Yeah, no, you're right. And Hembree has been good. That's one that I left out. Hembree has been good. He had that little injury hiccup, but he came back. Now the velocity is back up to 94, 95. So Hembree does look good. So that is a nice find for them in the bullpen. Appreciate the call, Larry. You can grab his line if you'd like it at 617-779-7937. Now, Joe Kelly last night. You know what I forgot about Joe Kelly? Oh, my God, does that guy work slow? Oh, my God, does he work slow? Now, he was horrible last night. He was not good last night. Gave up the run. But Joe Kelly... That was one thing that made Dave Dombrowski happy about last night's game is that Joe Kelly didn't come out and like strike three guys out in a row. Mookie had a hit off him. Bogaerts, remember, had a hit to bring in Mookie. So they were able to get to Joe Kelly a little bit. That worked out well for Dave Dombrowski last night. Now, the whole issue with the bullpen, and we can go back to this. We've surfaced around this a million different times. The problem was not letting Kelly and Kimbrel go. The problem was the fact that you didn't replace them. You just said, we got this kid from Indy Ball, Marcus Walden, who pitched in Indy Ball a couple of years ago. You didn't have competent replacements, if you will. That was the issue for the Red Sox as it pertains to the bullpen. If you didn't want to pay somebody along the lines of Craig Kimbrel all that big-time money, that $17 million per season, whatever he wanted at the time, you need to get somebody to replace him. 617-779-7937 is the number. Let's get to Sean. He is in Lowell. What's going on, Sean?
Hey, how are you guys?
Good, good. What do you got?
I was just thinking about the sales stuff. I'm actually wondering, I know a guy reported earlier about less motion and a more fluid motion and whatnot of his delivery. And I'm almost wondering if, with all his breakdowns the last 2 or 3 years, if his doctors got to him and told him that if he's going to continue, he needs to even out his delivery. And it has actually gotten to him and hurt, gone against him.
So you think that he's altered his delivery based on medical information that somebody gave to him, and that's why he's having issues?
Yes. And maybe he needs to adjust a la Price. And we're at the beginning of him being able to do that, and Price had issues with that, too, for a while. He wasn't always that good either.
Yeah, but Sean, do you honestly see anything that much different with his delivery this year? I just don't see the pitches. The pitches just aren't as effective as they once were. I don't see anything, like, remarkably different about the way he delivers the baseball, do you?
Yeah, I don't know. It seems a little smooth. I'm just wondering, maybe there's a little bit more... like, technically, maybe there's a little bit more time that batters are seeing the ball in his hand, or, like, the release point's a little different. There's a little more time to look at the ball. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean,
you'd
have to talk to the hitters on the other team for that, but...
Yeah, I mean, they're searching for answers, and I appreciate the call, Sean. I think it's more of the fact that this guy just doesn't have the stuff he once had. That's the issue. And remember, at the beginning of the year, they did point to something mechanical. It was a little bit of an adjustment. But I don't think it has to do with his mechanics. I just think it's a guy rearing back for 95, 96, and it takes him a lot of energy to get to that. It used to be easy heat for Chris Sale. Now it's becoming more difficult. And with the slider, he's got no feel for it. That's the reality of his slider right now. This guy has no feel for his slider whatsoever. I mean, the outing against the White Sox was embarrassing in the first inning. And then last night, the thing that stuck out to me about Chris Sale was he throws a slider to Justin Turner, and Justin Turner is able to get a hit off it to drive in a run to make the game 3-1. And then David Freese comes up to the plate, and he throws him 5 consecutive fastballs because he's afraid to go back to his slider. That's what stuck out to me, because he had just got burned on his slider to Justin Turner. He wouldn't go back to the slider. And that's his out pitch. That's his best pitch. Chris Sale's slider is what made Chris Sale one of the best pitchers in all of Major League Baseball. That's the issue I point to with Chris Sale at this particular point in time, is he has no confidence in his slider whatsoever. 617-779-7937 is the number. Let's get to Jack. He's in Marlboro. What's going on, Jack?
How you doing?
Good. What do you got, man?
As regard Kyrie Irving,
mm-hmm.
I think there's egos and then there's egos. And I think that Brad Stevens never dealt with a guy as narcissistic, and I don't think even the Celtics ever dealt with anybody as narcissistic as him. Everything revolved around him. Even when Marcus Smart came back, I remember him answering the question, well, what do you think about Marcus Smart? Well, it's going to be better for me when he comes back. And it's like,
yeah, you already did say that.
Whoa. It's like, you know, so I think it was a shock. Number two, I think that Danny Ainge had a plan to get Davis from New Orleans.
Right.
They were packed. So he kind of directed the philosophy of, well, we got to patronize Kyrie Irving, let him go to the All-Star game, Don't say anything bad about him. And I
I agree with that theory. You think basically Danny Ainge enabled him because they wanted to make they wanted to keep Kyrie so they could get Anthony Davis. I'm on to you. I agree with that theory. I've actually said that before. I agree with that.
And, you know, so Brown or Tatum or Smart or Rozier or one of those guys is going to be gone anyway. So one or two of them
right.
to get Davis. And then, you know, then Kyrie wins, being the jerk that he was. I mean, I never
So, Jack, hold on one sec. So you think basically Danny Ainge is like, you know what, Brad, just deal with the drama. Don't confront him about the drama. You think that's what that was like the edict he got from the front office?
Yep. Where Brad Stevens went wrong is playing Hayward. That was his problem.
Well, and that's another issue. And, Jack, I appreciate the call. You can grab his line if you'd like at 617-779-7937. That's a fair point. That's another thing to bring up when I talk about managing egos. Because remember, yes, Kyrie was the main problem in the locker room, but that was another issue. The Hayward issue was another issue. Remember, it was reported by multiple different people that some of the young guys on the team were aggravated with the amount of opportunities that Gordon Hayward was getting. That was something else that was going on in that locker room. And that has nothing to do with Kyrie Irving. That has everything to do with Brad Stevens and Gordon Hayward. So he wasn't able to manage that situation either. Was not able to manage that situation either. That's why I'm wondering if Brad Stevens is going to be able to get things together next year for the 2019-2020 version of the Celtics. I know most people just believe because everybody's so upset with the way Kyrie Irving acted. Everybody's so upset with the way that Kyrie Irving was here locally in Boston that everybody thinks, oh, because you take Kyrie out of the equation, Kemba Walker's been labeled as this great culture guy, and I'm not disputing that. I don't know Kemba personally, but everybody that's been around Kemba Walker seems to love the guy. But everybody thinks, oh, you put Kemba in, you take Kyrie out, all your problems are solved. Well, you still got to answer a lot of other questions. And there's still a lot of other guys on this team now that have egos that years ago, Brad Stevens was dealing with zero egos, right? Even Isaiah Thomas, when he came into this thing, he was not a star-level player. Remember, he was coming off the bench in Phoenix, and then he became a star under Brad Stevens. So Isaiah Thomas probably felt like he owed it to Brad Stevens, right, to respect Brad Stevens. But now you have all these guys that are looking to benefit themselves individually. And that's the question I'm going to have. Because also think about it from this perspective. If you're Jason Tatum, Kyrie Irving's gone. So you thought, okay, it's my turn now. This is going to be my team. I'm going to be the guy that is giving the crown to the organization. I'm going to be given the keys to the kingdom, so to speak. I'm going to be the guy that is asked to carry this team. Well, why'd you bring in Kemba? Well, this is supposed to be my team. Why'd you bring in Kemba? This is supposed to be my team. How does Brad Stevens deal with that? How does Brad Stevens deal with the fact Jason Tatum doesn't get the amount of shots he wants? Because remember, Jason Tatum's one of these guys. He's with Team USA. He's friends with Kyrie. He works out with Kobe Bryant. This dude's getting an ego. Remember, he's getting an ego now. And last year, Brad Stevens couldn't stop him from taking long twos. What's going to happen when Jason Tatum gets upset? Because now he's the future of the organization. So you can't rile up Jason Tatum, right? Can't get on his bad side. Because look at the Celtics team. They're never getting a free agent that is a big-time guy. I'm not talking about Kemba Al Horford status. I'm talking about an elite level guy. So your best hope at becoming an elite franchise is developing that guy internally. So you got to take care of Jason Tatum now. You got to make sure that Jason Tatum doesn't have an issue with people. 617-779-7937 is your number. Let's get to Owen. He's in Cambridge. What's up, Owen?
Yes, how you doing?
Good, good. What do you got?
I told him a second. I'm going to get this speaker on. How you doing?
Good, good. What's up?
Good. Hey, I appreciate you bringing up criticism of Stevens here. I think I have a couple of points here about.
Sure.
First of all, you know, I think, you know, you can criticize he's kind of soft on the sideline. He's a little too calm, and sometimes you need a spark. But that's beside the point. That his hands was tied so much by the idea that they're starstruck, that they had to get Davis and attract Davis. So Kyrie was hit with these kid gloves, and it destroyed really the development of the guys. You know, a mark of a player is to make the guys around them better, you know, but Tatum, you know, regressed, and then, you know, Brown, because Kyrie just handled the ball so much that those guys did not get the matchups that they did when he's not playing. See, they play a pace and they play a space, and then they move the ball to the matchups, and that's why they're so effective with him not on the ball. And Kyrie, you know, killed them, and he killed them in many ways. But, you know, I also think that, you know, Stevens, you know, what they, you know, this is a case in point. He walked up the court, 9 seconds left in the late season game, and, you know, Belichick would have chased his uniform. Casey Jones would have beat his ass. I mean, it's like, seriously, you know?
Yeah.
you know, but I appreciate it. And then the second point I'd like to make is, you know, the development of point, but also Horford, I think he left because he wanted to play the four. And I think the opportunity to play with Embiid at the five and then Harris and then, you know, Simmons on the pick and rolls. And so, you know, that team is going to be magical to move the ball. Because, you know, Simmons and Horford on a pick and pop or pick and roll with Embiid in the corner and Harris and then crashing the board. I think Chris Paul on that team, that would be a very, very, very dangerous offense to deal to stop. You know, South's got to get physical. You know, but these young players, you know, age has been great. On one point, he's stayed organic. They got these young players. If they had traded for Davis, we wouldn't have all these young players. We wouldn't have Tatum. We wouldn't have had, you know, we would have had to give up so much. It wasn't worth it. So Ainge is in a position. What he can do is trade, you know, Brown or something when during the season and Langford is developing and get, you know, get a big center, you know, or maybe sign like an Amir Johnson in the meantime to get that center and then, you know, give so this team is going to be fine, you know.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I appreciate the call, Owen. I don't know if this team's going to be fine. In terms of what fine means, is they're going to be a playoff team, but there's no hope that they can actually win an NBA title. And I don't want to trade Jaylen Brown at this particular point in time. You used the third overall pick on Brown and Tatum. I want to find out what you have. I want to look under the hood and see how good these guys really are. Because, look, your plan failed. It didn't work out, and it's not all on Danny Ainge. He didn't know Kyrie Irving was going to be this crazy. But now let's find out what these young kids actually have. That's what I want to find out. How good is Jason Tatum? And how good is Jaylen Brown? Because quite frankly, Jaylen Brown hasn't been given that opportunity to prove that he is worthy of the number three overall pick. And I'm not saying he can't prove it. I just want to see him actually given that opportunity. All right, 617-779-7937 is your number. Do you think Brad Stevens is the right coach for the 2019-2020 Celtics? Also, if you want to hop on board, weigh in on what's going on with Chris Sale right now, certainly welcome to do that as well. Coming up next, though, I want to get to this. The next Celtic that's going to want to get out of Boston. Brian Barrett with you on WEEI.
WEEI 93.7 FM.
I think Brad Stevens will be thrilled to have Kemba Walker as his point guard. The issue of leadership, of chemistry, was impacted last year with Kyrie Irving. That group never got together, and a lot of it was centered on Kyrie's discontent with the situation in Boston. What you get with Kemba Walker is a leader who is the same every single day. He comes to work. He does it through his action. He's going to be your hardest working player. And I think his game, as he moves into his 30s, they're going to ask him to have to do less in Boston.
All right, that's Adrian Wojnarowski on Kemba Walker coming to Boston. By the way, driving in today, saw Kemba, a little billboard, if you will, for Kemba at the Garden. You know that little thing in front of the Garden that, like, changes from different things? It'll be, like, during the playoffs, they'll show Bruins guys on there. They'll show upcoming concerts and whatnot. They had Welcome to Boston, Kemba. Saw that? Nice. Kemba's getting his warm welcome. 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett taking you up until Red Sox pregame with Will Fleming. So, yeah, that definitely, I hope that is the case, what Adrian Wojnarowski is saying. They ask him to do less because what I want to find out is how good is Jaylen Brown and how good is Jason Tatum. You spent third overall picks on the guys. That's what I want to find out. I'm wondering this, though. I'm wondering when Jaylen Brown starts to grow tired of playing for the Celtics, because you think about it. He was the one guy that called Kyrie Irving out last year. Remember, he said after Kyrie was calling out the young guys, he said, we can't make comments. We can't point fingers. We just got to empower each other. If we don't, everybody's going to go in their own little shell. So he was the one guy that actually had the lower intestinal fortitude, had a pair to actually call out Kyrie Irving. Everybody else was afraid of Kyrie Irving except Jaylen Brown. And what did he get Jaylen Brown? Got Jaylen Brown a spot on the bench. But I just look at it from Jaylen Brown's perspective. This is a guy that he was in Vegas for Summer League, and he was asked about his contract, and he essentially said the ball's in their court, so they haven't talked to him about a contract extension or anything along those lines. And I'm not saying that the Celtics should just give him a contract extension now. He needs to prove it. But he needs to be given the opportunity to prove it. That's the biggest gripe I have with how the Celtics have treated Jaylen Brown since he became a member of this organization. Because he went from being a guy 2 years ago, in the postseason, that was averaging 18 points per game, shooting 47% from the floor, 39% from three. To this year, he steps into a role with the Celtics in that starting lineup with Hayward and Kyrie and Tatum and Al. And they basically turned him into a spot-up shooter. It's like, hold on, that's not what Jaylen does. That's not going to help Jaylen Brown develop as a player. You're just asking him to go stand in the corner and shoot threes. That's not what he does. So you wonder why Jaylen Brown struggled at the beginning of the season. It's because he was put in a role that was not advantageous to his skill set. And that's on the head coach. That's on Brad Stevens. That's not on Jaylen Brown. That's on the head coach. And I think about some of the other things. The organization clearly favors Jason Tatum over Jaylen Brown based on the way that Jason Tatum is continually given the opportunity to take long twos. They clearly favor Jason Tatum over Jaylen Brown. There's no doubt about that whatsoever, and they're both third overall selections. So if you look at it from Jaylen Brown's perspective, he's probably thinking to himself, wait, I was also a number three pick. Why aren't I allowed to make the mistakes that Jason Tatum is making? Because Jason Tatum is taking bad shot after bad shot after bad shot, and nothing happens to him. I take the shots you're asking me to take in my new role, so to speak, and then you pull me out of the starting lineup, and you don't give me the opportunity to get it back. Because remember, Marcus Smart's the guy that stepped in for Jaylen Brown. But Jaylen Brown could have taken Marcus Morris's role in the starting lineup because Marcus Morris had that hot shooting start to the beginning of the season, but then he sucked for 3 months. In January, 41% from the floor, 36% from three. February, 42% from the field, 27% from three. And Jaylen Brown, after the new year, was absolutely tremendous for the Celtics, and Brad Stevens never gave him that opportunity to get his job back. They never gave him that opportunity.
Do the best I could with the cards that was dealt.
Yeah, that was Jaylen Brown trying to do the best he could with the cards he was dealt. But you also look around the league and you think about some of these other young players. Jamal Murray, Ben Simmons, Trae Young, De'Aaron Fox, Luka Doncic. They've all been put in bigger roles than Jaylen Brown has. And I get it. Part of it is, yeah, he was playing with Kyrie last year. But now going forward, if you're Jaylen Brown, do you trust that Brad Stevens is going to put you in the right position to develop as a basketball player? Because quite frankly, I wouldn't. Based on the way that Brad Stevens used Jaylen Brown last year, would you trust that he's going to put you in the right position? Because now 2 years ago in the playoffs, Brad Stevens didn't have any choice. He had to put Jaylen Brown, or he had to give Jaylen Brown the ball because there was nobody else besides him and Tatum that could create offense at that particular point in time. Heck, Terry Rozier was getting shots, right? So he had to let Jaylen Brown do his thing. But is this the year that the Celtics are actually going to allow Jaylen Brown to play through mistakes? Because last year they didn't allow him to do that. So what you want to find out is what is underneath the hood with Jason Tatum and with Jaylen Brown. That's what I want to find out from this season with the Celtics. And Jaylen Brown, I would really question what this Celtics organization thinks of me as a player. You put me on the bench. You didn't let me get the job back. And clearly the organization loves Tatum, absolutely adores Tatum. But how are they treating Jaylen Brown? He's the one out there talking about at Summer League how they haven't even approached him about a contract extension. And I'm sure that is something that in Jaylen Brown's mind irritates him. And when he tried to be a leader on the team, as a young guy on the team, third year with the team, he tried to be a leader. He realized early on in the season that this was an issue. He realized that Kyrie was a major issue for this team. He goes out there and he sticks up for himself and he thought his teammates, but nobody else supports him when he actually does that. Nobody else comes to Jaylen Brown's defense. Nobody else says, yeah, Jaylen's right. No, it was just Kyrie was allowed to call out the young guys. Jaylen Brown steps up and tries to be at least some sort of leader, which this team was clearly lacking last year. And what does he get for it? Jaylen, you stay on the bench. You stay on the bench. So if I was Jaylen Brown, if I come to training camp with the Celtics and I don't see that we're running some plays to me this year, I'm going to start getting really aggravated. Because I see when Jaylen Brown comes flying off those two screens in the corner, gets the ball, he's going downhill. The guy's a dynamic playmaker. I would just like to see more of that. I want to see more Jaylen Brown with the ball in his hands. And I look at Brad Stevens, you look at this team coming into next season, he's going to be trying to please Kemba. He's going to be trying to please Jason Tatum. It feels like to me that Jaylen Brown is going to be the odd man out, not to mention the fact that Gordon Hayward is somebody that has a previous relationship with the head coach. We know the young guys were upset with that last year. And Jaylen Brown, if he's going to be the fourth option on this team, how would you feel if you were the former number three overall pick in the draft? And even a guy like Cantor is going to get a bunch of shots because he's the only big man on this team that can actually score the basketball. So he's going to get his opportunities. If you're Jaylen Brown, you're thinking to yourself, I want to be a star in this league. A team used a number three overall selection on me. So if I was Jaylen Brown, I would be really worried about the situation heading into training camp. And personally, I don't think that should be the case. I want to see Jaylen Brown shine. I want to see Jaylen Brown get the opportunities. But last year, he didn't get the opportunities to demonstrate his skill set, so to speak. He was the odd man out. And it feels like this year again, Jaylen Brown is going to be the odd man out. And the thing that irks me about the Celtics is this is a guy that you identified as at least somebody you thought could eventually be an all-star level player, right? That's why you used the third overall selection on him. Sure, if you want to make a massive trade, he works in that as well. But you also identified him as a potential star in this league. And here's what aggravates me. They've never actually even found out if he could be that guy. Because you go back to the postseason a couple years ago, he had that opportunity. Now he hasn't been given it since. All right, thanks to Nick for producing Red Sox baseball. Coming up next, Will Fleming has you for pregame. Have a great night, everybody. Be safe and be well.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.